basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up.
Jerry West made it from the other side of the mid-point stripe.
Ford sends it to Kareem. Sky hook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille fade away.
Giants for the win. James puts up the three. Oh, it's good!
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in! With 5 tenths of a second remaining!
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And yesterday on his Mind the Game podcast, we got some insight on LeBron's timeline for free agency. And it's an interesting answer. He said that he's looking to make his decision on playing next year and where that might be at some point between late June and August. And D, that is a very interesting timeline for what the Lakers need to do. And we'll discuss that. He also mentioned a couple of times the possibility of playing in another arena. And when we were talking about, will LeBron be back in a pod the other day, you posited that, you know, on most of the versions of your team next year, LeBron is back. I'm a little less confident in that. And I think that this timeline that he puts out there certainly throws a wrench in things or might even clarify things a little bit more. But either way, curious about your insight on that. And I want to talk about that and then where to go from there.
Yeah, I should clarify about me looking at next year's roster and trying to build the best team that I could build. LeBron is on every version of that best team that I can build because of a couple of factors. One is that I don't expect him to make the max. I actually don't expect him to make even close to the max.
Or market value probably, right? Based on like just what he's actually worth today. Yeah.
Market value is still the max based off of economic factors. In terms of on-court play, I actually think he's very close, if not a max player during the playoffs. I think during the regular season, he has ups and downs like the stock market. That sort of over-season fluctuation, I expect to be more prevalent as he continues to age. But I also think he has a certain floor. He's a blue chip stock. He's not one of these random ones. And so he's not falling below a certain level. And I think that he's almost always helpful in a variety of ways. So in building out the next great Lakers team next season, if I were to build it, and trying to allocate all of the money, I'm hopeful to not give LeBron as much of that money, but still have him back. And I sort of detailed my sales pitch about that the other day as well. Regarding the timeline stuff, if LeBron decides he wants to continue to play basketball in August, great for him. He'll be able to play basketball for a team, maybe even the Lakers. It'll just be for the minimum. That's just how I see that. Free agency is basically over by the time we get to July 10th or 15th. Every year, there's a handful of really late signings, but I can decide in late June. That seems realistic. The draft is in late June or even like the early part of July. Sure. Free agency starts on July 1st, but the moratorium will end somewhere around the 4th of July. So even the first part of July, I think that's a reasonable timeline. If you start to get into mid-July or after, I just think that he's positioning himself in the market where it's unlikely he would be able to both compete for a championship on his next team and play for anything more than the minimum. One or the other.
Mm-hmm.
The timeline stuff is less of a concern to me, but I'm wondering where your head is.
I think all of it's predicated on to what degree is LeBron written in stone on next year's team and how they're building it. And I don't think he is. I think that the vast majority of the reporting about him being back next year is from a LeBron perspective. That's not to say that the Lakers don't want him back, but that I think what we said the other day about that they're going to build their own team despite that without LeBron in that equation as much as what's going to end up happening. And so with respect to the timeline, even if he decides in late June, the draft, I think, has the potential for some big moves to be made. Giannis is the biggest domino, and there have been rumblings about him getting moved on draft day and that Milwaukee is moving as though they've got multiple picks in this draft, right? So if LeBron isn't even deciding to around them, if LeBron is like a pillar of what they want to do going forward, it throws a wrench in things in that he would need to sort of agree to, okay, what's that number that you agree to with us? Okay, this is the number that we have left over as a result of that, because otherwise, to have any of the cap space in the first place, they have to renounce his rights, right? As we were explaining the other day. So if he is a pillar of that plan going forward, then yeah, I do think it throws a wrench in things. I just think this is further evidence that he isn't.
The optionality that we discussed the other day, we frame that almost exclusively through like, what can you do with cap space? But the biggest divergence of options that exist is, are the players who are currently on your team who are going to be free agents, are they on next year's team? And that's true for LeBron. I think it's true for Austin Reeves. And I think it's true for Rui. Those are like the three main free agents where I'm just like, okay, well, the Lakers need to have contingencies and options that exist within their main planning ideas, Pete, that include LeBron, that don't include LeBron, that include Austin Reeves, that don't include Austin Reeves, that include Rui and don't include Rui. And the degree to which you have multiple options within each of those frameworks and which option you have more of. Here's a team with Austin and LeBron, and we've got 25 scenarios within our planning.
Yeah.
If we've got 50 scenarios of the version with Austin but without LeBron, that sort of tells you where the Lakers' mindset would be around where LeBron fits in their priority structure. If the Lakers are out here planning for versions of their team with LeBron on it, they are in some way, shape, or form ceding power in their negotiations with LeBron to LeBron, because they are actively engaging in this thought process of, we actually want him back on the team. And okay, well, if you want me back, then what are you willing to pay me? You only want to give me this? Well, why is that if you really want me back? How about this number instead? And suddenly, the cap space you thought you had, you don't have nearly as much of that if you're giving half of that to LeBron, or even more. I would argue in some ways this is the same strategy with Austin. If the Lakers have put it out there, we really want Austin Reeves back, then his representation, I'm sure, is going to be like, oh, do you now?
Show me. Yeah.
Right? But this is why, to me, the timeline stuff is less of a concern to me, because if LeBron decides he's going to drag it out, the Lakers are going to renounce his rights. They are going to be like, well, we have sort of no choice but to move forward. And again, it would always be respectful. It would be from this idea of, we want you back, but it would also always be from the perspective of, we have to build the next great team that we think is sustainable for the entirety of like Luka and Austin Reeves' career together, if Austin is such a bigger priority. So I'm forecasting 5 to 7 years out. How can I be a team that is sustainably great? And I think that his piece within that is about 1 or 2 years of that at the most. If I'm building out a team, I'm trying to build the best team that I can, and then LeBron be the cherry on top of that that hopefully puts me over the top.
Let's go to break here, and I want to talk about, well, what does that look like then if LeBron is not part of it? So I've been thinking about this idea of, if LeBron isn't back, what does it mean to replace him, D? And one of the, I think, more popular versions is with some degree of depth, and not in terms of like 10 through 15 type of guys, but basically replacing LeBron with a couple of starting level players. So to give specific names on this, let's say we could get Hartenstein from OKC and Peyton Watson on an RFA contract. And that's who we add this year. And then we go to Bron and be like, look, this is who we added, and hopefully you play for us. But if not, this is going to be our team. And there's a couple guys in their 20s. Watson's 23, right? Let's go ahead. Assuming that Hartenstein or whatever other center replaces DA, replacing LeBron and DA with Peyton Watson and Hartenstein, which would be a good summer. Like, that's a good use of that type of money. Those are two good players, although I think Watson's going to get overpaid. I do like him. But I don't look at that and be like, all right, OKC, San Antonio, here we come. You know, LeBron is even still one of the main guys. Like, right? the idea of replacing LeBron with a couple of good starters to me entirely reshapes the concept of a team. We even saw in the playoffs, for all the talk of like Austin's our number two, Luka's our number one, LeBron's our number three, sure looked like LeBron was our number one for most of the playoffs, right? And so the idea of just replacing him with a couple of guys that you don't even really give the ball to a ton, I think that's a totally different idea of a team that I just wanted to talk to you. However, on the other side of it, I've heard Redick and others be like, yeah, we had three quarterbacks, and sort of framing it in a like, we've got an excess of this thing that I do think they have a bit of a heart for like more conventional. We've got two guys who handle the ball and then shooters around that type of thing. I don't know though, man, that's LeBron James.
You've talked about the dragons of the league in the past. And we had a series of pods that we did years ago on the historical basketball gods. Mm-hmm. And LeBron is not what he once was, but he is cut from that cloth.
He's always going to be that.
And his ability to call back to that, and I think we saw that particularly in the Houston series, but even in the OKC series, he had to sort of wear that mantle. He has recall to that idea. And he can sort of slip into those shoes and still walk comfortably. Going in a totally different direction of supporting cast players, the sorts of players who are contextually going to be complementary to that sort of guy, it is a huge transition to say we're losing one of those archetypes and replacing him with a totally different team-building mechanism.
Role players, it might be a couple of them, and they might even be good, but that's just a totally different thing.
Right, and it re-ups the responsibility on Luka to be great, which is an expectation already, and so I don't even want to entertain that that's a shift for anything for him. It does reposition Austin into the role that he was earlier in the season as a full-time thing, and I'll be interested to see if that can be a season-long idea for him. I thought he was great, and then he got hurt. When he did get hurt with the calf, it came after a string of like really like high usage games too, where it was just like, oh man, Austin's playing like 39 minutes a night doing everything for this team.
That's another thing to keep in mind with all of this too, is the physical demand that it takes to be able to play this type of role. I don't think it's a coincidence that Austin had the bad foot last year, that he had the oblique thing in the calf. Like, he's being asked to do more than he ever has.
So, in getting back to this idea of like the dragons of the league, and I know that you sort of said something about this on a couple of different pods, but I think that this is another time to hit this idea. The idea of depth versus like a top level dude. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but the contention that the Lakers weren't deep enough is true. But the point of where they need the most bang for their buck might be with their superstars. We were paying LeBron $50-something million. If you get a dude who's playing like a $50-something million player like every single night, and to be fair to LeBron, I thought he was much closer to that during the playoffs, but during the regular season, you can go a long way when your star player guys are league wreckers.
Yeah, and honestly, as good as LeBron was over the course of the playoffs, I didn't see that from him, that like Giannis, Wemby, these are, again, the league record type of players that can really be like, wow, we've got a huge problem with this guy and being able to defend him. And so, yeah, shifting that to another player like that, obviously Giannis is the obvious one here in terms of availability, D, but whether it's Giannis or somebody else, just the idea of, do you need to replace LeBron with another dragon, I suppose?
I think that the Lakers have always operated under a system in which you want as many of those guys as possible, or at least two of them on your team. Look at the cover artwork for the podcast. Mikan was a solo guy, but he played in a version of the NBA where that's a total distant memory for how teams were built. The next guy is the Weston Baylor and Wilt and Kareem and Magic, Shaq, Kobe, LeBron, all of those teams, it's always two of them.
I mean, even in today's game, if we look at the conference finalists, you're depending on either one guy like that and then a ton of depth that I don't think is the game that we can play. But if you go back, even the, like the recent champions, there's almost always two guys. That, even Jalen Williams last year was scoring 40 in big time playoff games and had a level of like unstoppability to them. You know, you need really high level guys at this level.
Jalen Williams made an All-NBA team. He was a top 15 player over a regular season deemed by voters.
You know, Dean, now that you mentioned that, I think that is my threshold in terms of what type of player I think they need. Like Giannis is a top 5-6 dude in the league. That would be great if you could get that good of a player. Yeah. But I do think they need a guy who's an All-NBA caliber player to replace LeBron.
A top 20 player in the league. In any given season, I think that there are anywhere between 17 and 22 players who can viably make an All-NBA team. And I think injuries knock some guys out. Bad years for a certain level of guys to say, oh, well, he didn't have it this year, and so he didn't make an All-NBA team. And the guys who historically make 10, 12, 15 All-NBA teams, they're the guys who sort of live in that Mount Rushmore pantheon level of dude. But there's plenty of guys where it's just like, yeah, he made 6 All-NBA teams over like a 17-year career. If the Lakers have one of that level guy, to pull a name from the past like Carmelo Anthony, he's clearly not as good as LeBron. He was not as good as like Kevin Durant as like an overall player, but he was Carmelo Anthony. He was a dude for a long ass time. Was he ever going to win an MVP? He was not. But pair a guy of that level with a player on Luka's level and you're like, oh, okay, well, we've got a top 5 guy and we've got a top 15 to 20 guy in the entire league. That's a great starting point.
Does that top 15, 20 guy in the league have to be a front court player, though? Because that would chop it even down even more. So I'm thinking through my head, aside from Giannis, who are the guys that fit this description of the top 17 to 22 type of players in the league that might be available this year? I'm like, okay, Giannis, Jaylen Brown doesn't do anything for us, right? He's a perimeter player, right? Like, who else could this be?
Yeah, it's not a big list. I look at like what Towns is doing right now for the Knicks, right? And Towns is, his role has sort of shifted throughout the year. He was seemingly not as happy with his role to start the season, whereas it's like he wasn't getting the ball as much and it was very much a Brunson-centric offense. I would argue the Knicks took off in these playoffs when they started to run the offense a little bit more through Towns and he was more of a hub player. But Towns grabs 12, 13 rebounds a game, can score you 25 points a night. I don't think he'll make an All-NBA team this year, but he's been historically an All-NBA level player and an All-Star basically almost every season.
Yeah, he's in the mix for that, for sure.
I don't think Towns is available, but does he fit necessarily with Luka? Is that the sort of guy you want from a stylistic standpoint? Probably not, but when you talk about front court players, like there's actually not a bunch of dudes where you're like, that's a surefire All-NBA big power forward or center who is available. Those guys are typically like number one option guys, Pete. They are the Jokic's, the Wembys of the world. They're not like, you're the team's second best player, but you're actually an All-NBA level dude. The last guy who I would argue was sort of like that as a second option was Anthony Davis, where it's just like, oh no, you're going to make an All-NBA team.
Yes.
As a two-way player, Gobert flirted with all NBA teams consistently as a all-defense DPOY level guy. But the Lakers actually need this guy to be good on offense, too, not just, oh, you can anchor our defense.
Yes, totally agree with that. And so that leaves the Lakers in an interesting spot. Let's go to break here. Keep talking about it. So as you go through the league and try to evaluate who those players are that might be available this summer, again, I have a hard time coming up with a different name other than Giannis. And even if the Lakers want Giannis and make a run at him, Shams reported yesterday that the Lakers' offer would be 3 first swaps and absorbing him into cap space. And then the value that comes from that, that if you've been listening to this pod, been talking about for a very long time now, I think there's more value in that than people realize, especially in a year that, as we've covered, there are a lot of teams trying to get out of money. So being a way station for, like, yeah, we'll take Cam Johnson, give us a pick or two to be able to take that this year, right? If the Warriors wanted to get out of Jimmy Butler and have one more year with Steph this year and be able to build out of that, Paul George out of Philly, there are all sorts of different, from large salaries like that to smaller salaries that we've seen $15 million contracts like Terrence Mann, for example, get moved for future first. If I'm in Milwaukee's position, I'm very much looking for the ability to get as much capital as possible, and current players don't matter nearly as much.
Particularly the Bucks team, who doesn't control their own draft. If they can get draft picks from a bunch of other teams that have the possibility of like moving up or something, then that's value to you.
100%. And this is why I think both Atlanta and Portland are big time players in the Giannis conversations, because they both own Milwaukee picks in that. And so like, if Giannis were to go to Boston, for example, and you'd route Jaylen Brown to Atlanta, I would imagine that their own picks end up back in Milwaukee. However, even if the Lakers want to pursue Giannis and have the capability to get him or a more realistic shot at him, if they don't, they may end up, whether they like it or not, in that place of, we don't know if we can replace LeBron with a dude, and we actually have to replace him with more of a balanced 2-3 guys role player type of approach. So Lakers may end up in this spot whether they like it or not. I'm curious your thoughts on that. And then do you think there are versions of that where they could be good enough to be a contender?
That's where I think LeBron being back is also realistic. If you could replace LeBron with Giannis and then try to cobble out the rest of your roster, then you could basically say like, okay, well, we've got Giannis and we've got Luka and we've got Austin Reeves, and then we still got Jake LaRavia and done X, Y, and Z. Like, okay.
Well, also, I want to point out too, I know that that sounds very bleak when LaRavia is the next guy that comes up. If you go down this road of like creating cap space for the team and the machinations that they can make, of course they couldn't be as deep as they could if they didn't trade for a guy making $58 million. But there are several things that they could do to fill out the roster in ways that it's not nearly as like Giannis, Austin, and Luka, and then nobody else. But really any version of any team that has LeBron at any discounted rate, like, of course you would want to have him and he'd make you better.
Yes. And so the version of the team that I was just talking about is one without LeBron. If Giannis is on the team, then I don't even know where LeBron fits, honestly. And that's a whole nother side discussion of this dialogue here. But the Lakers didn't get that superstar player. They didn't get a Giannis. No one shook free. And so what do you do now? The LeBron idea of, all right, well, what is the number you feel comfortable paying LeBron? I'm talking from the Lakers' perspective, not what LeBron wants. Okay, so A, can you sell him on that? But B, can you sell him on that within the context of, these are the other players that I've gotten? You brought up two names in terms of Peyton Watson and Hartenstein. Let's say the Lakers made a run at Peyton Watson and then they traded for another player into their cap space. Hartenstein never shook free, but it's another like center sort of player. And the Lakers get that guy and they get Peyton Watson. And then maybe they're able to also like swing like a smaller deal for a guy who makes like $10 million or less. And let's just say that the Lakers now have the possibility of bringing back very much close to the same exact team. But with LeBron, and the number they have in mind for LeBron is between $10 and $15 million, like basically up to the full mid-level exception. They could then be like, okay, well, we've got Luka, Austin, and LeBron. We got Peyton Watson. We got this other fictional player and these two other fictional players that they traded for with cap space. Is that a championship contender? I think it depends on who those two other fictional players are. But to me, you're getting closer. And that idea of LeBron being someone who still has that muscle memory of being a great player, I think matters within that context even more. But you're playing with fire to a certain degree because you've slotted LeBron into yep. one of those spots where you're just like, well, no, actually, we need you to be a dude.
And you're also, I think, greatly lessening your ability to get a Peyton Watson or re-signing Rui, whatever direction you go with that fourth spot, because LeBron's going to start. There's no version of him coming back where he comes off of the bench. But if you're Peyton Watson, not only are you looking to sign a deal, you're looking to start somewhere.
I honestly think that a Watson-LeBron front court is an interesting duo, particularly because Watson defends down so often rather than defending actual power forwards. One of the reasons why Denver was so heartbroken that Watson wasn't available was that they needed him to defend guards. They needed him to defend like Anthony Edwards. They thought that if they got to a position where they were going to have to play OKC, that Watson's like an option against Shea. Right? He's someone that defends down more than he defends like his naturally sized players. But to your point, you are sort of shoehorning him in there and you're basically saying, well, yeah, we need you to do exactly this. And you're right. It's like not perfect within that context.
The other forward is Luka on the defensive end, right? Like, if you've got LeBron and Luka, your starters at the forward spot are etched in stone.
Defensively, at least.
Defensively, right. And so, yeah, like, is Peyton Watson coming here to be our two guard? We could talk more about the specific skill sets of players. I'm a little less high on Watson's on-ball defense. I think he's a better low man, rotate over and get a block shot from time to time. I think that him guarding down out of necessity for Denver is part of the reason why that they weren't going to be, like, I think he's got no shot on Shea, for example. Like, he's okay on ball, but I think that he's got some ability off the dribble. He's got some of that shoot pass dribble ability that they've been emphasizing and all that. We can talk more about the specifics of candidates, but whether it's Watson or somebody else, like, the ability to replace LeBron, even if he resigns for one more year, that has to be, I think, accomplished this summer in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, too, is that one of the things that we haven't talked about at all, but is a reality of roster building, is that once you become a cap space team, even if you have a bird rights player on your team like Austin, where his cap hold is going to be low enough where you're still going to be able to go over the cap by a significant margin after the fact by signing him last, the reality is that you better use that cap space to build out your team in a significant way so that by the time you get to your next transaction cycle, you are like filling out what you believe to be a championship ready group, right? You may not be able to win it in that first season, but by the time you get to that second season, you should be primed. I brought up the Heatles Heat the other day. That team did all of this cap gymnastics in order to fit LeBron, Wade, and Bosch all into their cap space. And the only guys they really kept on the team were guys who were on like rookie contracts. And then they kept Udonis Haslem. And I think they still might have had Mike Miller. But that was basically it.
Yeah, they had to move Michael Beasley to Minnesota and attach a pick to it, all that. Yeah.
Like, it wasn't until the next summer where they were able to have a transaction cycle where they added Shane Battier and Ray Allen. And then we're able to like add minimums. That first season, it was just like Mike Bibby and
lots of over the hill guys.
And like Eric Dampier. And like, it was guys like that, right?
That
were sort of like filling out their roster. And it was just like, okay, well, we've got this elite big three, but behind that, we don't really have the depth and we need these three guys to carry us. And so your point about, okay, well, replace LeBron while you can. Like, yeah, because if you spend all that cap space this summer on two rotation players, look, good job. You got two starting level players who you think can be high level contributors deep into the playoffs. Those are very much needed players, but you're almost never then going to be able to get that. If you really decide, well, actually, I need a player better than Austin Reeves without giving up Austin Reeves.
Right.
Then you're stuck trading those guys that you just used with cap space. And so the goal should be get as close as you can now. And then by your next transaction cycles, you're maybe making smaller trades.
Yeah.
And then when you go into the following summer, you hopefully have the big boy MLE and then the biannual exception. And then you're basically right up against the first apron, but you've built out kind of what OKC did when they traded for Caruso and got Hartenstein.
We will continue these conversations. I'm glad we talked about this. Everybody have a good weekend. We will be back on Monday, talk a little bit more about how the conference finals are shaking out. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. They will. Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound to Lowry. 3 seconds left. Van Exel for the winner. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two, one, miss it. Unbelievable. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yes.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.